Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Steve, thank you so much for taking the time to come and talk to us all the way from North Carolina. How are you today?
Doing great, Jess.
Fantastic. I probably should say this evening because it's nighttime for you, daytime for us. So thank you for sitting up late at night. I'm looking forward to talking to you because we've been looking at your work, examining your work, and there's such a rich tapestry of the things you do. So I can't wait to get into our conversation today. Before we do get into our conversation, Steve, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your background because you've got a background as a broadcaster on radio, comedy, and you said to me off air that you had your start in the greeting card business, and that's a really rich and interesting career. For the sake of our audience members, can you just join some dots for us about how one thing led to another? Because like all lives, it's not a linear process, and I'm sure yours has got its detours and sidetracks as well. So I'm curious to understand the life and times.
Well, growing up, sports was big. Sports was big with me. Sports was big with my family. So growing up, I always aspired and thought that, you know, there would be something around the corner, especially in the sport of baseball. When I didn't end up playing baseball on what I would call a professional level, I was very interested in the whole broadcasting thing. And, you know, I used to, and I'll do it for your audience, I used to just have fun and I'd sit there and, you know, I'd do something like Brown on second, Rodriguez on first, bottom of the third, here is the 2-2 pitch on the way. And I would go through that and I would drop my voice a few octaves and things. And then I had a local radio station and it started out with, would you do some high school baseball? Would you do, you know, so you started out and it was like one of those things like, man, I get in there and people began to follow me just because I would say, bottom of the second, it is a 2-2 ball game. And I would do it almost like the professionals were doing it. And I would have somebody say to me, they go, now, do you, your voice sounds familiar. Have you done this for the, and that's kind of how it all started. But I've always been a guy that loves to make people laugh. Even if I was doing something as simple as a high school baseball game, there's lags. This isn't a game that moves quickly. There would be things that I would say and people would say, we just love listening to the anecdotal side of when you're broadcasting. So my personality was, if I go to a birthday party, I'm going to make somebody laugh. If I go, you know, if somebody invites me to their son's graduation, something tells me I'll have a little corner. So I was always, my mother used to say, you always had an audience. You know, you always had an audience. And I just shared this with a friend. Hadn't seen a friend, Jess, for 45 years.
Wow.
And he said to me, I remember you in high school. Teachers used to just say, any chance I can teach today? Are you going to do a set for us? I mean, you going to entertain us? Or because that was my personality. I was the class clown in high school.
Yeah.
So even back then, my roots were, you know, just entertain and make people laugh. So that's kind of how that all started. And then I spent 11 years in the greeting card industry. And when you spend time in an industry where it's either serious, romantic, people that are dealing with trying to get better. So you deal with writers, you deal with creative people. And then you have a guy like me who was a cross-section of sales, marketing, creative, and humor. And your audience might appreciate this. They asked me to write a couple of funny cards. And I said, you know, no, I don't want to get into the writing. And they said, no. They said, you're a very funny guy. And I told them, I said, you don't want me writing funny cards. And they said, well, why? And I said, well, I'm going through, you know, a time in my life. And it was actually, I'll tell your audience, I was going through a divorce, not of my choosing. Mm-hmm. So I was a little bit more bitter because I didn't want the divorce. So one night I thought, you know what, if you want a funny card, then I'll write a couple of funny cards. So I wrote one and I'll never forget. I handed it to he was assistant director of creative.
Yep.
And he reads the card. He literally opens the card and reads it. He looks at the front again. And it was just, it was a piece of paper folded over. He reads this thing twice and looks at me and says, you need counseling. I said, what? Here's what I wrote. On the outside of the card, I wrote, I'm miserable without you. And then when you opened it up, it said, it's almost like you're here. I thought it was hilarious. you know.
Oh, I think it's great.
Anyways, yeah, so I spent 11 years in the greeting card industry, and that really is where I had the ability to, I mean, I learned a lot about leadership. I learned a lot, quite frankly, about small business. I had some great mentors, some people that were good leaders and that mentored me in areas that I needed mentoring, you know, whether that was character, whether that was just understanding what purpose was, just understanding really how a business needs to run to be successful.
There's so many wonderful segues and introductions or entry points into this conversation that you've provided me. And so thank you for making my job as an interviewer so much more enjoyable, so much easier. But I'm going to start at the beginning with baseball, because baseball is not such a big game here in Australia. It is definitely here, but we play cricket, which is probably for you guys. If you said baseball is a slow game, then cricket is going to be a very slow game. But what's really interesting around baseball, you said that you had aspirations to play sport and then you went into the broadcasting of it. I'm curious to ask, what is it about sport that's so attractive to you? What is it that you enjoy about the contest? What is it that you enjoy about seeing people achieve or compete or do things of that nature? What stimulates you in that arena?
It's the mental side of it.
Yeah.
And I was a pitcher. So, you know, as a pitcher, I read a book one time growing up. Somebody gave me the book and they said about a high percentage of success is based on your mental approach to the game. Mm. And it's like anything else. It doesn't matter if it's golf. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, you got to have a short-term memory, because when you make a mistake, you cannot let it get to you. And it's ironic that you just asked me about sports, because today, that's my word, is mindset. Mm. I think people have to have the right mindset. You know, when you go through changes, and I mean, let's face it, I mean, we've all gone through a lot of changes in the last 14, 15 months. When you go through changes, you have to have the right mindset. You have to have the right approach. So whether it is baseball, whether it is cricket, whether it is soccer, no matter what sport it is, it's your mental approach to the game. And it's discipline. It takes a lot of discipline to be good at any sport. And are you willing to pay the price? Okay, small business. You got to do the heavy lifting. I mean, there is a lot of things that are not fun, but if you're willing to pay the price and you have that right mindset, you're going to be successful at it. So sports, I think, you know, can be a great analogy to just about anything.
I really, really appreciate you talking about mindset, because I 100% agree with you. I've got a daughter. Actually, she's a very competitive gymnast. Listeners to this show will know that I often refer to her gymnastics a bit. And of course, there is the discipline of turning up to training. There's the discipline of repetition and mastery of skill. And I imagine as a pitcher, there was a certain number of pitches you got to get right over the base, you know, and all those sorts of things. But the mindset is so critical, because in the gymnastics arena, when they're going through the air from one bar to another, there's a lot of fear involved. And being able to conquer that fear and being able to do those things, again, I think is a really important skill to be able to take through life as well. I wanted to talk a little bit about when it comes to having the right mindset for business and picking out all the attributes we look at. And from sports, I've spoken about the ability to overcome fear and other things. What other sorts of things go into having a productive mindset? What is it that helps us be forward moving as we go through our business life?
I think, first of all, you have to center your thoughts on, are you getting better? Are you improving? Because in a small business, you know, and I use small business because I've got a small business. And what I tell leaders sometimes, you know, if you are the owner of a small business, if you are the leader of a group of people, you have to grow yourself. Mm. Grow yourself before you try to grow your people. You know, everybody talks about servant leadership and they talk about all of these different ways that you should be interacting with your employees. Of course, in a corporate setting, you know, if you're the leader of a group of people, but I tell people, it starts with you. It's a self-improvement thing. Yeah. Every morning, Jess, every morning I wake up, okay, I read out of two different books, and my mindset is I'm going to read and get better at something. I'm going to learn something. I'm going to see how I can apply it. And then when I'm done reading, I have a journal, and I write literally about eight. It's a small journal. I write about eight lines. And every morning, as I'm reading, it might put me in a trajectory of, you know, I want to talk about discipline, or it might put me, you know, gratitude. you know, how grateful I am for certain things. But I write down thoughts because I train myself. You talk about mindset. It's my mindset that I want to get better. I want to improve. I have a meeting Wednesday with an employee. And I bought a book, read the book. I'm going to give her a copy of the book. And what will impress her probably the most is that I didn't just hear about this book and then buy the book and say, here, read this. She'll be impressed with the fact that I not only read the book, but what I do when I read a book, I highlight. When I'm finished reading the book, I then write out on my computer what all I've highlighted. And here's what I call. I'll put the title of the book and I'll put highlights. And then when she reads it, we'll discuss. I'll say, give me your highlights. You know, what was your takeaway from that book? And I think people that are around me sometimes, and they've told me this, this isn't me. They've said, we're just impressed about how you approach what you do before you try to shift into managing us or telling us or mentoring us or coaching us or training us or helping us. It's like, I tell people, leadership is about taking people where they've never been. But Jess, if you're going to take somebody where they've never been, you better go there first.
Yeah. I really, again, appreciate and understand the value of growing yourself before you try to grow others. And, you know, the bottleneck is always at the top of the bottle, as the saying goes. And again, for any business to grow first, the leadership team must grow. Why is it that some people miss that memo?
Well, I think it's something that I'll give a piece of advice, all right?
Yeah.
Starve the ego, feed the soul.
Ooh, I like that. Okay.
Okay. So if you starve the ego, like, give you an example. The ego is reactive. Mm-hmm. Okay. The ego is reactive. Let's go to the soul. The ego is reactive, but the soul is creative. So when you look at the counterpart of what happens when you let the ego take over the soul, it's kind of like I had a former secretary. She used to say to me, processes and procedures are important. They're very important. That's not going to make you successful. It's the purpose. It's focusing on purpose, why we do what we do versus the process or the procedure. And I think sometimes it's that ego that gets in the way of allowing us to be the humble servant that we should be when we're working with other people. And you hear me say this, working with other people, not people that work for me. Everybody that works around me works with me. And that's how I try to make them feel. And I would hope that they would feel that way.
Yeah. So just to change gear for a second, you've written a multitude of books and you've been on many different media platforms. You've been featured in all sorts of different things. So I just want to start with your books. You've got a couple of really interesting books. You Enjoy the Ride, Making a Difference, Hide Your Goat, Detour, amongst other things. My first question to you is about the discipline of sitting down to write those books. I've written one book and I know how much work goes into writing a book. So firstly, my hat goes off to you for writing that many books. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about why, because I know when you sit down to write a book, there's a message you want to get out. Certainly I've felt that way too. I'm currently writing my second book. There's something I want to say. But from the discipline of writing those four books, the messages you want to get out, just walk me through the journey that you've been on as you've written those books, because typically those books resonate with the author as much as they do with the audience. So I'm curious to understand your journey as it relates to the books.
Well, my journey starts out by saying that I was speaking first. So the old story sometimes is chicken or the egg. For me, I was speaking. And I was in California and I had somebody come up to me after I finished speaking and said, if you can put in a book what you just said in the last 60 minutes, it will become a national bestseller. And I had just spoken on the subject of Enjoy the Ride. But the premise of this was, you know, the true joy of life is in the trip. And I talked in there about passion. I talked in there about you got to cure your destination disease, live more for today, less for tomorrow, never about yesterday. I talked about focus. There was a lot of things I was talking about. And after that, the journey began where I sat down and I thought, okay, let me take what I call my, no pun intended, my PowerPoints from the, and again, I don't use PowerPoint, that's why it's a pun, but what was I saying that was really resonating? Like I would say something like, life picks on everyone, don't take it personal. So I'd say something and somebody said, oh, I really like that. You know, life's experiences will either make you bitter or better, stronger or weaker. And I have somebody come up to me and say, gosh, I really like that. Well, all of a sudden, I began to write down a lot of those points. And then I began to do some research and I began to have my own thought process behind it. So here it was. Here I am writing a book called Enjoy the Ride. And it all started with a woman who says to me, if you could just write what you said. Well, let me tell you the one thing that she said to me, that she said, this is a game changer. That secretary that I just alluded to came into my office. I'm working for a greeting card company, shuts the door. And I'm at the time, I'm an executive at the company, shuts the door and looks at me and just says this to me. She said, if every job in the world paid the same, if it all paid the same, being a dentist, being an author, being a cricket player, being a server, if everything paid the same, what would you wake up and do for the rest of your life? Basically, what she was asking me, I called it the $2 question. She said, if every job paid $2 an hour, what would you wake up and do for the rest of your life? It made me start to think how many people get up every day and they don't even know why they do what they do. It's just a processional. And I started to write in the very first part of that book about expectations, how we live everybody else's expectations. We do. We just start to live, you know, you're supposed to do this, and then you're supposed to do this. And then after you get married, you have kids. And here's what I'm trying to say, Jess. Nobody tells you to go get a credit card. Nobody tells you to go get a brand new car. But there's these expectations that you feel that you have. And before you know it, you're in this thing called life, and you're going at 100 miles an hour, and you're not enjoying the ride. So that was the premise to write the book. And that book centered on how do you, as an individual, how do you as a person enjoy that ride? How do you really check your passion? Quite frankly, I've had this question asked hundreds of times. How do you find your passion? How do you know what your passion is? So I find sometimes that my journey in writing was I wrote about that. And then it was like after having people then that come up to me and go, you know, the one thing that wasn't in the book. I don't know if you've experienced this with your book. Yeah. But, you know, I loved your book. But, you know, one thing I thought that you might expound on more. Well, every time they would say it, note to self, I would write it down. I would write it down. And before I knew it, I thought, you know what? I'm going to write a book about XYZ.
I get that with the podcast. You know, why did you let that person off the hook without exploring that question? And of course, at that particular moment of time, the question didn't pop in my head or whatever it is. But certainly with my book, I had that. You know, that's a really good point you made in the book, Jesse. But, you know, I'd like to have learned more about blah, blah, blah. So exactly right. And that's, interestingly enough, the impetus for the second book. So enjoying the ride and having that experience where you've been delivering that presentation, someone saying that's going to change their life, change your life too, because you've shifted into that world a lot. Obviously, there's been other books you've written as well, particularly around Hide Your Goat and Make a Difference. I wanted to, obviously, there's this connection piece between the books and the journey that people go on throughout their life. But in the context of where we are at a moment in time, it's 2021 May as we're recording this, and the world has been through a pretty up and down 12 months, to say the least. You know, 12 months ago, we were probably all feeling a lot more fretful about the world, what sort of situation we might confront than we are feeling now. We've had some good news around vaccines and other things. I wanted to ask you a little bit about leadership in the context of uncertainty, leadership, dealing with change, dealing with your own emotional journey while you're trying to be supportive to others as well. You know, trying for many business owners, they're trying very hard to look after their teams while trying not to share their own feelings or concerns or burden their team with those things. Could we just have a bit of a talk about leadership and dealing with uncertainty?
Well, the uncertainty piece leads me to tell you that so many people, whether things are going good, whether things are going bad, no matter what the situation is, when there's that gap. So here's this gap and there's an uncertainty. It's kind of like you get a diagnosis. You know, we use a medical metaphor. You get the diagnosis and then they say, well, we're going to do a biopsy. And think about the time from the time you have the biopsy until you actually get the news of what it really is. So there's this uncertainty. And in everything in life, and I've heard this saying, and I'm sure it's standard all over the world, I'll hear people say, it is what it is. And it absolutely, I go, no, it's not. When this pandemic started, I got my team together. And the first thing I said to them is, don't you dare say it is what it is. It is what you make it. It is what you make it. And the thing that you have to do as a leader during times of uncertainty is, number one, you have to show confidence.
Yeah.
You have to be confident, because confidence is contagious.
Yep.
And if a person knows that you're confident, they're going to perform, you know, here again, take care of those people. You be confident and watch how they then take care of, in plain words, the customer.
Yes.
There's this culture that somebody will say, man, they just, things are different there. I mean, their whole attitude, I mean, just the whole way they approach it. And I think that's the difference sometimes is you have leaders. Let's go back to the books. You said something to me about writing the books. Let me just share this with you. Mm-hmm. Writing the book is the easy part. It's living the book that's the hard part.
Tell me more about that.
Well, here's my point. It's one thing to write a bestseller. It's another thing to live a bestseller.
Mm.
Because you have to have your actions match your beliefs.
Yes.
While you may believe this and while you think this is, you know, this is good for everybody else, is it something that you yourself are living?
Yes.
As my youngest son one time said to me, Dad, love your book. Love your book. And I thought, okay, here we come. Sarcasm. He goes, love the book. He goes, I just wish you loved it as much as you did when you wrote it. Because he said, you're not enjoying the ride. What we show people is sometimes as leaders, we're wanting to put our foot. Here's something that leaders need to realize. Stop giving people permission to ruin your day. Because when somebody ruins your day, you're going to influence a whole bunch of other people in a way that you never imagined. And in a single moment, you can change the trajectory of a person's life. You can change the trajectory of how they think, how they approach that day, that minute, that hour. But I don't think sometimes leaders see that. They walk in, they've got the weight of the world on their shoulders. They've got the stress. They've got the pressure. They own the business. Sometimes their accounts payable, their accounts receivable, you know, they're everything.
Yep.
And it shows. And then all of a sudden, you have created a culture, whether it's a group of five or six people or a group of 30 people. You've created the culture because you yourself have allowed people to influence you and circumstances. But it's because some days we just look at it like, well, it is what it is. I'm like, no, it's not.
Mm.
It's how we're going to approach it. We're going to make it. We will make it different.
Listening to you say that has taken me back to an earlier point in my life. Years ago, Steve, I learned to sell when I read the Rich Dad, Poor Dad books by Robert Kiyosaki. And somewhere in that, he said, go and join a network marketing company. And I took that advice and learned those skills through that training system, which was phenomenal, really, really good. A lot of people are skeptical about those companies. I had a profoundly good experience. And one of my mentors at the time from afar was a guy called Dexter Yeager. And he always used to say, essentially, you get to create your own economic environment. You get to create this. It is what you make it, to your point. And one of the things that I have had almost not quite tattooed, but virtually tattooed, at least imprinted in my brain, is that I'm the author, coming back to the books, I'm the author of my own story. I get to write it. I don't have to buy into someone else's story, and I get to create my own circumstances. And what I really love that you've just said is it's not just what it is. It's what you make of it. And I want to just, you know, underline, bold type, give that a lot of credence, because I think your message there is absolutely the message that our audience loves to hear. Because here's the other thing that happens, and I'm sure you hear this in other industries as well, is there's some people who believe that their customers won't pay for this, their customers won't pay for that, my customers won't accept this, my customers, they're too cheap for that, and therefore I'm at the effect of all of that, and it just, it is what it is, right? And what I'm loving about this whole notion that you've raised, that's actually just in their own mind. That's their story. It doesn't have to be the story. So can we just talk about changing the story? If someone's sitting there going, oh, Jesse, that all sounds great, or Steve, you know, that's all right for you, how do we change the record?
Well, it goes back to mindset. When I wrote Detour, every chapter in the book Detour is the mindset. First of all, the first chapter is the mindset of recognition. you have to recognize and see. You know, you mentioned about write your own story. Well, here's what I tell people. Write your own story, but trust the author. You have to trust the author. You yourself, hide your goat. What's the first chapter in that? Discover. You have to discover who you are. So in order to write your story, in order to make this story something that is going to be successful in work, do you trust yourself? Do you trust the author enough that as you begin to approach this, and we're using the word story, and as you begin to look at your business and you begin to say, well, I recognize this and I know this, but we don't. Do you have any idea of the statistic on a heart attack? Okay, so you have a heart attack, and it's, I think it's within 6 days, the eating habits, over 80% of the people that had heart disease were told, you have heart disease, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do this, and you shouldn't do this. 80% of people have recognized what happened. They know what happened. They know what they should do, but they don't do it. They don't do it. It's like one of those phenomena, like, what? Now, wait a minute. If you know that this is what you have and you know this is what you shouldn't do, then why are we doing it? It's because of a mindset. It's because while we recognize it, we don't have any resolve to make the change. It's kind of like anything in life, you know, and that's one of the things. If you look, and again, your listeners right now, I'm sure later might, but if you look at how many virtual presentations I have done, and if you'd have told me 2 years ago I'd be doing virtual presentations, I said, Jess, there is no way. I don't do webinars. I don't do virtual. And yet, I think through this Thursday, this 30 will mark my 90th virtual presentation.
Wow.
Since last March. Okay, so 14 months later, I've done 90 virtual presentations. You know, you won't see books behind me. You know, I'm in a studio and I'm rocking it when I'm doing it. But here's my point. It was, I recognized right away, we are not going to be together. We are not going to be in person. There is no way. And all of a sudden, they just started postponing. I had 40-some postponements and 3 weeks in, and it was like, wow. But here's what I said. Let's go back to it is what we make it. I said, we're going to make it. We've recognized we've got a situation.
Yeah.
What's the resolution? What's the result? I didn't know Zoom and, you know, every once in a while I FaceTimed with my kids or I didn't understand technology. First thing I did, Jess, once I recognized it, my first call was to literally a videographer. I said, can I pay to just spend 2 hours with you? Pick your brain and you tell me. Because I wanted him to kind of project where he thought this would all end up. Where, and the rest is history. Because that person, through a decision I made, ended up, we're now close friends. I have spent a lot of time in that film studio. We have done a lot of things together. But you can sit there and say to yourself, oh, you know, none of us were prepared for it.
No.
But it's a mindset of, okay, I recognize it. Now I'm going to resolve it. And by the way, let's use another R, resourceful. You have to be resourceful. You have to do things that you thought you would never do. There are things that I do when I do a live virtual presentation. I never thought I'd be doing it, but I've done it. People have loved it. People say, well, you can't be funny. Well, let me ask you a question. When you go to the motion picture theater, when you go to see a movie on the big screen, there's not 300 or 400 people there watching the actual production of the movie.
No.
You have a bunch of cameras. Those actors and actresses, I mean, they are phenomenal. And the reason why they're phenomenal, there's nobody out there. It's just them and a camera and a producer. So when I finally said, you know what, I'm going to act like there is 600 people out there while I'm in this studio. And I would look this way, and then I would look this way, and I would be like this, and what a welcome. And I was all over the place. I practiced and I practiced and I practiced. I was resourceful. Very resourceful. And I would tape things. And the guy in the studio one time said, he goes, you're a maniac. I said, I'm just being resourceful because I know if I don't, I'm going to look directly into this one camera and I'm not going to act like there's an audience. So you face the detours. You know, it's the experiences in life that are going to put us on this windy, curvy road. But that's what's going to make us better. You know, that's what's going to make us do things because that's the mindset. So whether it is a small business, medium-sized business, whoever is listening right now, you've got to recognize, be resourceful. You've got to have a resolve within you to say, you know what? I got this. I got this. And this too shall pass. This too shall end.
Yes.
Let's just right now focus on what's the task at hand. What are we doing the next day? What are we doing in the morning? Don't get ahead of yourself. Just don't get ahead of yourself.
It's really interesting because, again, I think when COVID hit, yeah, our approach was just to get to work, really, and to roll our sleeves up. And like you, we weren't going to live venues anymore. We had to do a lot of things on video. We had to develop some new skills that we hadn't had to develop in the past. And I think it's the same now for dentists and practice owners moving through the other side of that as well. They've had to learn some skills as well. They've had to learn a lot about people management. They've had to learn a lot about just the operations and the processes. And again, what I'm loving what you're saying is, like, the situation's here. We can't change that so much, but we can make the best of it. It is what we make of it. And I guess there's that. I'm going to butcher this story. You tell stories very well. I am not as good as you at that. But there's that great story of the two young boys, and they're both asked to shovel out the stables and to move the manure. And one of the boys walks in there, yeah, begrudgingly, you know, shoveling the manure out. And the other kid kind of dives headfirst into it, you know, scooping it out as fast as he can. And the stable hand or whoever's running the show says, you know, what are you doing? He goes, with so much crap in here, there's got to be a pony somewhere, right? And I think with COVID and other things like that, we've got to find those gems. We've got to find the good things out of it. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about identifying opportunities, because you identified the opportunity to go online. We saw that too. Others have seen it as well. But I wanted to ask you, are there any particular skills or are there any particular thought processes that have allowed you in the past to navigate those difficult times, uncertain times, but to identify the opportunity within it, to find the pony amongst the crap, basically?
Well, one thing, I always look for the things that I'm grateful for. And, you know, and the term silver lining came out. And for me, it's kind of like one of the first engagements I was asked, would I speak to the National Association of Elementary School Principals, a large group, you can imagine, in the United States of America, how many elementary school principals there are. And so they said, we want you to go into the studio, we want you to record something. And one of the things that I challenged every principal, now remember, they were asking me to do this in April. So you're looking at graduations. And here's what I said, and I even moved real close into the camera when I said this to, I said, you principals that are listening to this right now, this is an opportunity right now for you to get a list of every senior in that school, pick up the phone. And when you pick up the phone, you call them and say, this is Principal John Smith. I just wanted to let you know how proud I am of the fact that you go to this high school. I also want you to know how it's heart-wrenching, the fact that we probably won't be able to have graduation in person, and say thank you. Thank you so much. Well, let's go to a dentist. Let's just think about a dentist. My dentist picked up the phone, not his assistant. My dentist picked up the phone, took the opportunity to call me and my wife. Now you can say, we have it, Steve, here we go again. He probably knows you. He's read your books. And no. He and I have a relationship where he will ask me a question on, hey, if this was you, what would you do? Well, he didn't ask me on this one. It was just a matter of, hey, I just want to let you know, I was thinking about you guys. I know it's going to be a little bit touch and go. I know there's going to be some apprehension. He went through the whole thing. He said, but you know something? He said, I'm here for you. And he said, let me give you two or three things that I think you can do since you won't be coming in person right now. Here's some things. What he did is he reached out to his customers. Now, let me share this with you. You get enough customers talking, and you go ahead and tell me how much money that you would have to spend on advertisement to make up for just what you've created. In Philadelphia, there is a restaurant that sells a $120 cheesesteak.
I saw that.
$120. Okay. Barclay Prime. Okay. Do you think Barclay Prime sells that $120 cheesesteak because of any other reason than I'm talking to you tonight about it? Your listeners are hearing about it. they did it because they said, we need to get people talking. We need to get people talking about our restaurant. Everybody has filet. Everybody has prime rib. Everybody has lobster. What if we, because we're in Philadelphia, did a cheesesteak? And on top of the cheesesteak, we put two or three different kinds of cheeses. We put a little lobster. What if we did this and did that? People wait in line to get into this restaurant now. Well, it's the same thing with a dentist. You're not only looking to retain who you have, you're looking to garner new business. And those people that took the opportunity through something that was just incredibly challenging. Mm-hmm. I called customers. Every event that was postponed, I personally called. And I had 80, it ended up being about 80 some events that were postponed. I called. I hand wrote cards. Just wanted to let you know during this challenging time, you and your team is in my thoughts. You know what it was like to get a note from a dentist that said, Steve and Diane, just wanted you to know that our team is thinking about you during this challenging time. We'll get through this. Respectfully, Ted, you know, signs his name. I'm going to tell you something. If somebody says to me, who's your dentist? They don't have to ask me. I'm telling people about the experience that was created. But I think sometimes we don't see it as an opportunity. It's kind of like when I told people, be grateful. Think about the things that you're grateful for, because that gratitude will go a long way to uncovering even more opportunities. Mm-hmm. So when you have that heart of gratitude of saying, listen, I got a chance to be closer to my wife because I'm not traveling. I got a chance to get to know my kids better because we were Zooming every Sunday. There were things that happened that I never in a million years would have thought, whoa, this was a huge opportunity. And my wife has said the same thing. We got to know each other so much better. Now, she'll say to you, if she was talking to you, Jess, she'd say, you know, it's amazing we're still married. But, I mean, she has a little different twist and version of this.
She hasn't given you that card, has she?
No, she has not given me that card.
Very good. Oh, that's fantastic. I really appreciate the reframe around what the situation is to see it as the opportunity, because again, you know, certainly, you know, there's some dentists here in Australia that really did do that very well. There are others that may not have quite caught that wave or had the presence of mind to do that. But moving forward, they will, which is fantastic. I wanted to ask you really quickly also just about keeping the mindset positive, because we've spoken about having the positive mindset, but we also know that we're human. We know that, you know, we have days where we're kind of up and down. How do you maintain that consistency of positivity? What are your thoughts around, you know, just trying to turn it into a habit rather than just a one-off thing? And how do we, you know, do that on a consistent basis?
Well, I'll act like I've got all of your listeners in front of me right now. They're all in front of me. So I'm going to ask that question. Yes. I would ask all the listeners, if you were to define leadership in one word, what would be the one word you would define leadership? Now, we would have a lot of people raise their hands and say a lot of things. But leadership is influence. You can't change people, but you can influence people. So now let me answer your question by now that I've said that. Here's the question I'm going to ask every person. Do you influence people more than they influence you? Do you influence people more than they influence you? Let me give you an example. There's a gentleman that lives in our neighborhood. Cantankerous, negative, doesn't smile, doesn't wave. My wife will say to me, I cannot believe you wait every time I see him. I wave. If I'm at the mailbox and he happens to be out there, I'm like, hey, neighbor, what's going on? He never, about a year ago, I waved to him and my wife was in the car and he went like this to me. He gave me one of those. My wife, I thought she was going to fall out of the car. And she said, I said, listen, I don't know what's going on in his life.
Yeah.
I don't know what his story is. I don't know what causes him to do the things he does and act the way he does. But I'm going to say this. I'm not going to let his negativity influence me. I'm going to let my positive approach to life influence him. And too many times, we allow the circumstance, we allow the person to influence us when we have all of the control. What does it take to wave to a person? Well, I'm not waving to them. I'm not. You know what? They don't wave to me. I'm not. And how many times have we said something? Look at social media. I don't know about Australia, but I can only tell you this. In the U.S., it is a platform that was supposed to be for good, for positive. And yet there's so much noise. And there are so many people that when you look at it, it's like somebody asked me just the other day, they said, your Facebook is so positive. I'm not going to put anything negative on there. I want to stretch your mind, encourage your heart, make you smile. I want to feed your soul. I don't want to feed my ego and I don't want to feed your ego. What I want to do is make sure that I influence you in a way. Now, you might say, you know, somebody might see something that's on my Facebook or Twitter or something and go, oh, you know, that's so Pollyanna. That's just, you know, that's Steve, you know, Mr. Positive. Well, that's fine. I would rather be that than be the person who is just spewing out the negativity. I tell people, shut out the noise. You've got to shut out the noise, because if you don't, you're going to allow their influence to create something within you. Here's a good example that your listeners need to follow, and that is this. Before you say it, before you email it, before you post it, before you tweet it, ask yourself this question. Is what I'm going to say going to improve the situation? If it doesn't, don't say it, email it, post it, or tweet it. Just ask yourself, look at the email you just wrote. Look at the thing you were just about to send. Is that going to improve the situation? If it doesn't, don't do it. Because for me, there's times I'm human. I don't let emotion, never let emotion take over your intellect. If you do, it's going to create a scenario that you're not going to really like it.
Yeah. When emotions are high, intelligence can be low. Yeah. Steve, lots of really good things there. I was looking into your website a moment ago and you've got your series Motivation Bites there. And there's obviously, you know, 52 topics to keep people engaged and motivated throughout the year. And I wanted just to pick up on one or two of these topics and ask you to speak to them just for a moment so that people can get a bit of an idea of your thoughts around a few of these things. But I wanted to talk a little bit about kindness. One of the topics that you talk about is the topic of kindness, and it feeds into what you've just shared already. So that's why I picked that one. But where does kindness live in the modern world? Is it, I mean, I have a personal view that kindness is, I think, the social lubricant that makes the world go round. I think it's good for everyone. But as you've just articulated, in today's social media driven world, sometimes that can be forgotten. Where do you see kindness fitting into day-to-day life?
I see kindness as I see giving, and that is that you don't give to get, and you don't be kind to someone, making an assumption that, gee, if I'm kind to this person, I'll get the reciprocity, you know, of this. What you do is you look at, you just look at a situation. Look, you said at the very beginning, you know, we started this, it's in the morning where you're at, it's in the evening where I'm at. You could go ask my wife right now, and if you said to her, I want brutal honesty. Was he looking forward to this? Here's the way I look at this. I did not know Jess Green until we came on Zoom. Okay. But I approach it as I'm going to have another person, another friend. I'm going to be able to talk to people that if there's one person that I say one thing that changes a direction that makes them say, man, I'm so glad. It's an opportunity. Well, that goes back to being kind. Kindness says, I'm not worried about what the time zones are. Kindness says, I'm not going to worry about how long it's going to take to record this. Kindness to me sometimes is just an act of when you do something, you're appreciative of where you're at in life. So you reciprocate the blessings. It's kind of like I always say, too blessed to be stressed. I'm just too blessed to be stressed. So that kindness for me is this. This is an act of kindness. This is not me saying to my personal assistant, oh, come on, seriously? 7:30 at night on a Monday night? This is me saying, man, that sounds like a great opportunity. And then going online, looking at your show, trying to do a little homework. But then the other thing that maybe your listeners don't know, I was sold when it was like organic. When I read about organic, I want an organic interview. I don't want 7 questions. I don't want things that I research and all of a sudden I look like I'm a, no offense, but I'm a contributor on a news channel going, well, Jess, what I think is, you know, no, because you can tell it was all, they gave you the questions, you rehearsed them. No, I'd rather say something that maybe was like later, I'm like, did I just say that? It's all organic. And I think that's the thing that really sold me. So right away, it's again, it's the reciprocity of kindness. It's like, I'm going to do this with no expectations, no expectations. But I also know this, whether it is Australia, whether it is New Zealand, whether it's the US, whether it's UK, no matter where a listener might be, my wife said this right before I came on the air. Right before I came on the air, she said, you know, isn't it cool to think that somebody who needs to read Enjoy the Ride, somebody who's not enjoying the journey, might hear about it, order it on Amazon, and all of a sudden, you get this email 3 months from now that says, you may not know who I am. I was listening to the Savvy Dentist, Jess Green. He was I don't know about you, Jess. That's why I do what I do. That is exactly why I do what I do. And that's why I would tell every business owner, you have no idea who's walking through your door. You have no idea what their morning was. You don't know what their week was. Here's what I will tell you, Phil, that in a single encounter, in a single moment, your kindness can change the trajectory of their life because you don't know what they're going through. Because if you could see what they see, feel what they feel, and hear what they hear, if you could feel, see, and hear, you probably would treat them differently. So there's times that I'm very kind because sometimes people aren't acting in such a way that you're saying, you know, they didn't deserve you to be that kind. But I don't know. People don't bring you the wrong order in a restaurant to make you mad.
No.
People don't do things, and yet I'm usually kind, and I'll usually say, no big deal. It's fine. It's fine. You know, I always say this, if that's the worst thing that happens to me today, it's going to be a great day.
We're okay.
It's going to be a great day.
Well, it is a great day, and you've made my day much greater for coming on our show today, Stephen, and I know our listeners have had a great day as a result of listening to you as well. I want to just to take a moment to express my thanks to you for sharing not just your wisdom and your insights, but your humanity and giving of yourself. And I can tell when I talk to people, the organic conversations rather than the 20 question kind of conversations, right. We get to the heart of the matter, and you've been really willing to go there. And I just want to say thank you, because that's what makes fun for me. And it gives me great joy to do that. So thank you for indulging me as well. Steve, I know that there's going to be a lot of people that do want to read Enjoy the Ride or Hide Your Goat and all those other sorts of resources you've got there. They can obviously get those books on Amazon. And ladies and gents, please do. No one comes on here with a commercial intent. People come here because they want to share and give. And I believe that giving is a two-way street. So I'd really encourage you to go out and take advantage of the resources that Steve's produced and published. They're wonderful. They're world-class. And I commend them to you. But he's also got his Motivation Bites, and I think that's going to be a really important resource for all of us to make sure we stay on the right path and keep on that path. So again, thank you for producing that, Steve. I think it's a really good resource, and I appreciate it a great deal. I know it's a lot of work that goes into that, and so thank you for putting that work in for the benefit of all of us. So you're a good man. So thank you.
You're so welcome. So welcome. Thank you for having me. I mean, I'm just humbled and blessed to be a part of this podcast.
Oh, thank you. Steve, I'm looking forward to catching up when we can do this again, but I have one request of you if I can.
Yes, absolutely.
If you were calling a baseball game, how do you wrap up the innings at the end of the game?
How do you wrap up the innings? Well, after an inning.
Or how do you wrap up the end of the match? If you were calling it, if you were broadcasting it, how would you call time on the game?
It all depends on if we won or lost.
We definitely won. I'm wondering if you can take us out with a radio production of calling the end of the game.
Well, I would say this, you know, it would be one of those at the end of this game, it would be, ladies and gentlemen, if you missed it tonight, you have missed a remarkable match. Savvy Dentist hits it out of the park and remain undefeated.
I love it. Thank you, Steve. You're an absolute champion. Thank you, mate. I really, really appreciate that. All right, my friend. Lovely to talk to you. And I'm looking forward to when we can do it again soon.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
You too. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.